With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
And we are live. And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Blake Ruffino. This is Ruffino and Joe Show. See, I was already doing the AYS thing. I am one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my other co-host, Joe DeLeon. Good evening, good sir.
Disappear for a day because I'm sick and we're already rusty, man. This is why we can't take any days off. A little bit, 2 days. But you're right. We're a little rusty here. We can't take any more days off. We're back. I'm sure that we're going to argue plenty on today's show because we got to react to this top 25 ranking that was dropped by the College Football Video Game. I will say one thing that was forgotten about with this, Blake, that it does have a disclaimer that they're going to adjust it throughout the season. It is open to interpretation and adjustment, so that might change. But I think a lot of us can agree said list was not very accurate.
It is not. And as someone who has been and frequented the place a lot of times that the hat that you're wearing in Baton Rouge, anybody putting Death Valley not number one is an idiot. Sorry, I hate to tell you. There's a reason that national people go there and say it's the best college football atmosphere in the country. Because it is the concrete pantheon of steel that will shake throughout the night. Joe, they said they're using the LSU-Alabama game from 2022 to insert sound. But you know what I did like? Did you see the Penn State thing versus Michigan?
I did think that was pretty sick. I did think that was very sick.
Here's the unrealistic right. thing about that, though. You can't play music when a team is trying to snap the ball.
Can't play me. That is a very good point.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very good point that they didn't. I'm sure that they adjusted it for the sake of trying to play up the trailer. I will get to the obvious thing here, though. I think everyone collectively saw that list and said, why the hell is Kyle Field number one? Most, and I understand that there was the whole shit that happened a month ago where everyone got mad at me. Yeah, I'd agree that
they're taking a shot at you. I literally tweeted this out. EA Sports is taking a shot at you for going viral for saying that Kyle Field sucked.
Yeah, now.
It is a top 10 atmosphere, though.
I would say it's a top 10 atmosphere, and this isn't my statistic, but Brad Crawford tweeted this out. Really good point. Texas A&M, since joining the SEC, is 24-20. They're 24-20. How can you put a 24-20 in-conference team since playing in the SEC that is in-conference, the difficult slate of teams on their schedule, how can you put that team at number one? It is clearly difficult to play in, but that's pretty egregious that they put them at number one. I think most would agree that there are much Tiger Stadium, harder atmospheres to play in.
Yeah, Tiger Stadium, Death Valley is the hardest place. We'll talk about that. But speaking of Texas A&M, buddy, did the rivalry of Texas and Texas A&M get better, bigger? Now, I don't know if it could have gotten bigger, but the sense of the nature that Texas is coming into the league, Joe, next week, okay, they will be joining officially the SEC. They snatch Jim Schlossnagel from Texas A&M, which I have spoke on it a lot. I'll speak on it again tonight, but I would love to hear what you think about A&M getting poached by Texas.
Yeah, yesterday was really hilarious because it was just a full come to Jesus moment for A&M fans because real reality set in, because not only did everybody take time out of their day to clown on you for the stadium ranking thing, but everybody took time out of their day to clown on not only them losing the national championship, but also losing their head coach. It was a weird day, though. That has to be one of the weirdest coaching change situations. really hard to remain credible if you're, how do you pronounce his name? Schlossnagel? How do you say
it?
I don't know college baseball. It went viral and it was highly covered because of the way that he responded to a reporter attacking him and then proceeding to turn around and leave despite him claiming that those rumors were untrue or the question itself was uncredible to ask.
Well, I'll tell you this. He did, in his opening statement today, apologize to Tex-Aggs. He apologized to the kid. It doesn't matter. You did what you did.
Yeah.
And Joe, you know what I kept thinking about, and I was waiting to do it on this show because you and I have debated. I wanted to talk about this last night, but I tabled it. The NCAA, excuse me, is trying to enact the transfer portal from 45 days to 30 days in college football. But I think that yesterday embodied everything that I have been trying to say about, I understand that the portal has to be different. The portal necessarily isn't the issue as much as tampering is, because a lot of coaches use the portal to kick, not I want to say kick players off, but they also utilize it to process kids. How can yesterday happen and then the NCAA look at all of this and say, you know what, we need to reduce the portal? Because y'all, every single player in the country in any sport legitimately looked at yesterday and said, oh, so you're mad at me again about and wanting to shrink the portal. Meanwhile, Jim Schlossnagel can be a complete asshole, which, by the way, so many rumors flying out around him. My man might like his favorite candy must be Skittles. I'll just leave it at that. Taste of the rainbow. But all I'm going to say here is, how are we here? How are we here that a coach can do what Jim Schlossnagel just did and completely shit? And Joe, let me just say this. I feel bad for A&M fans. Let me tell you why I feel bad for A&M fans. Because if you, as a Notre Dame fan, who has not, with all due respect, won a national championship in the Big Three since 1989, they haven't won one since 1939. In the back of their minds, no matter whatever happens, that fan base will believe or think in the back of their mind, did our head coach just botch a national championship because he's going to our rival? How are we here? And you want to continue?
Whoa, wait. Here's one thing, though. What, saying how are we here, though, I mean, like, this is – stuff like this has happened through the history of college athletics.
Not like this.
I think it's merely an exception. I don't think it has to do with anything else that's changed in college athletics. I just think it happened to be a rare occurrence.
Joe,
are we really surprised, though?
Am I surprised? Do you want me to be honest? Knowing what I know about college baseball, no. Am I surprised and shocked that you would leave your biggest rival to go to the other? Which, by the way, I'm just going to be honest. I mean, it's, what does Texas A&M have or not have that Texas does from a baseball facility or anything? The recruiting grounds is the same. There's nothing. The only reason he went is because he didn't get his way, okay? And the AD, Chris Del Conte, is the new AD or is the AD of Texas, and they were friends and together at TCU. Let's just call it what it is. Yesterday for baseball was a big day. It grew the sport. Texas grew the sport yesterday. There's been no more content about college baseball other than this. But, Joe, the bottom line is, it's shitty, and I feel bad for A&M fans. Now, LSU fans are going to kill me for that. I think they're one of our bigger rivals now. But you cannot tell me that that's not a shitty move by him.
It is a shitty move, but at the same time, I don't really feel bad for any fan base for coaching movement. I think that it's part of the sport. I think players moving and leaving is now even more part of a sport. I just think that this is the natural way that things are always going to happen. I mean, I would argue that if theoretically, say Steve Sarkisian gets the call and he moves up to the NFL, which probably won't happen, or he retires abruptly because of who knows what, I'm sure that they would call Mike Elko if Mike Elko was having a successful run, but hadn't won any national titles.
That's not what happened, though.
I understand that there's much more unique details, but all I'm trying to say is here is, why are we surprised that historically successful programs are attractive to big name candidates, and if they're approached by said successful programs, that they wouldn't strongly consider leaving and taking those jobs? It's just like if you're successful in
because
your
you're
career,
playing for a national
if you're successful in your career and a big name legacy company that you know has stability and resources calls and offers you a job, you're going to consider taking it. You're probably going to take it.
No, Joe, he's in a national championship game. The way that they handled this is the biggest issue. It's not always, it's not complete. I can understand the move. But, Joe, if I legitimately have been beating the dog shit, which is what's been happening here, which A&M has been beating the dog shit out of Texas in college baseball for over the last 3 years that Schlossnagel's been there, and, okay, Texas comes for me. Well, the bottom line is, Joe, A&M just is literally giving him and gave him $80 million for a new stadium. Joe, $80 million. Oh, by the way,
In the contracts that he has? What's the difference in the contract that he's taking at Texas?
Well, it's going to be $35 million guaranteed. A 10-year contract for $35 million guaranteed. It's the biggest baseball head coaching move ever from a financial standpoint.
Okay, and we're shocked by that?
Are you shocked that – do you think A&M wouldn't match it?
I don't know if they would.
Joe – they literally have gave him $80 million for a new baseball facility.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that there's probably a we don't know for sure, and no, we don't
only
know.
Paying him $1 million more dollars a year. And at that place, are you kidding me?
I'm sure that there's other reasons that come in effect. Look, all I'm saying is that, like, why are we surprised that the way that a job market functions. I think it was just very unique timing that the best candidate for them that has connections to the current athletic director, as you said, with Del Conte, right? And Del Conte is one of the best athletic directors in all of sports. There is a transitioning athletic director at Texas A&M, so no established relationship. Maybe there was already poor footing that was happening between him and the new AD. Who knows? We don't know all these things. There's a lot of unique circumstances on top of the fact that Texas is moving into the SEC full-time. Texas just let go of said head coach, and Texas A&M was just in a national championship. All of these unique timing points, I think, make it a lot more overblown than a move like this.
It's not overblown, Joe. Let me give this equivalent.
I don't think it's overblown. Sorry, that's not the right word. But it doesn't surprise me.
Well, let me just put it like this before we move on. If this were to happen in football, it would break the internet. We would literally talk about it for a week because they're losing everybody. Their whole team is going to have
it's probably going to happen in football.
But Joe, until it happens, no, it won't. I mean, like at some point we got to come to the realization here that what happened. And by the way, Joe, you're playing for a natty, man. That you hadn't won a big. I mean, we joke about A&M not, you know, and you know what? Hey, you know what? Not winning one since 1939. You know what I hate the most? I can't go out there in good conscience and clown the Aggie fans like I want to because I feel bad for the way that their head coach did all this shit.
Why should you see? This is where I'm coming off on. Why should you feel bad?
Because my
you should
team,
never because my you should never feel bad.
Because my team went through exactly what they're going through at the current moment.
In what sport?
In football.
Oh, wait.
Saban has a bad year at LSU. He can't take the heat.
Well,
he's got
to the NFL.
Yeah, but hold on. He's got shit going on with him out, you know, off the field, which nobody wants to talk about in his legacy. He leaves because he's in trouble. I'm just going to leave it there. But he gets in trouble. He leaves. He says, I'm never going back to college football. I'm not going back to the SEC. Then the next day he goes to Bama. At LSU, he says, I'm never leaving Baton Rouge. The next day he leaves. I know of somebody that saw him doing something very inappropriate that I'm old enough to remember that people killed Ed Orgeron for.
And also, to be clear, I'm not saying that I'm not feeling bad specifically because it's Texas A&M fans.
No,
No. All I'm trying to say is that this stuff happens. I don't feel bad when there's coaching movement. Just like I didn't feel bad for myself and for Notre Dame fans when Brian Kelly leaves to go to LSU in the manner that he did. late in the recruiting cycle, late in the coaching carousel cycle, where they didn't really have.
No, he was the first coach that left.
Was it late in the?
No,
he wasn't. No,
signing day had been passed for everybody. He was the first coach that got plucked. It was him and then Lincoln, in that order.
But okay, but there had been other openings that had been open at the time.
No,
forget. Okay, forget me misremembering the timing for a second.
Okay,
all I'm saying is that when this shit happens, where programs of slightly higher value or have slightly more money and are willing to be desperate for a moment to overpay for your current coach, you shouldn't be surprised. And I don't think anyone should feel bad for them. It's just the natural flow of things in college athletics.
I guess agree to somewhat disagree. What else is new on the Fino and Joe show? All right, we'll also be doing an Oklahoma State deep dive, so you want to stick around for that. We come back and do our top
– If we get to that, I don't.
We're
know.
We're gonna get to it. Okay. Toughest stadiums is not gonna be that long. I promise.
Well, we're talking about DeBoer too.
Oh, if we got to punt something, we'll punt that.
Oh, lame. Okay. You don't want to talk. You don't want to give DeBoer credit.
I mean, we give DeBoer credit. It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to me. We'll get to DeBoer recruiting, Oklahoma State deep dive, toughest stadiums. We do that after we talk about our friends over at BetOnline. Stay with us. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way for you to wager on all of your favorite sports, contests, events, with the first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews for all the news for each league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, college sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all of your sports information for live, in-game betting, props, and futures. Head on over to BetOnline today and use your mobile device to join and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE50, that's BELIEVE50, BLEAV50, to receive your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's BetOnline.ag, BetOnline.ag. Everywhere we go, we're just surrounded by the University of Texas, man. Every single place that we go. Joe, yesterday, EA Sports, who I believe has been doing an absolutely perfect job in building this video game. The excitement is on another level. I have loved everything that they have done until yesterday. Because yesterday, they came out with their list of top 10, but you said top 25. Maybe I just missed the top 25, but
They posted the full top 25 in a separate article. Do you want me to read the whole thing?
No, I mean, I got it right here. I'm about to put it up on the screen here. But here is the top 10 list from EA Sports of the toughest places to play in college football. Number one, Kyle Field. Number two, Bryant-Denny. Number three, Tiger Stadium. Number four, Ohio Stadium. Number five, Sanford Stadium. Excuse me. Beaver Stadium, Pitt State. Number six, Camp Randall. Glad to see Camp Randall up there, though, man. Gaylord Family, Oklahoma Memorial Stadium, Oklahoma at number eight. Doak Campbell at number nine. And Ben Hill Griffin Stadium at number 10. Joe, I got to admit something here, okay? I don't want to go off on this long tangent because I want to, you know, we got lots to that we got to get to here. Here's my top 10 list, but yeah, I'm going to stop at number one. Tiger Stadium, Death Valley, without a shadow of a doubt, has got to be the number one on any list when it comes to toughest places to play in the country. Look, I'm biased on a lot of things. I'll never admit it. I am completely biased on this one. I have been to a lot of these stadiums, these SEC stadiums. No place at night on the road is there. Is it a tougher environment or place to play in more than Death Valley? Joe, the ground shakes. You know, if anybody wants to remember something, remember the 2022 Alabama game, Joe, when you literally couldn't hear Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler on the call because when Jane Daniels throws a corner route in the back of the end zone for a touchdown to retake the lead over the great Nick Saban in year one under Brian Kelly, the place literally hit a Richter scale. Joe, the ground was shaking so much that they thought a fucking earthquake was going on. It's not the first time it's happened in Baton Rouge. It happens, Joe, maybe once, twice a decade. That is the place that you're walking into. Joe, when I promise you, when you get in there and you're on the sidelines, which I have been on during a game, I've posted photos of them when I used to be on the sidelines during games. Joe, your ears are going to ring for a week. That is how loud that place can be. I will not personally hear anybody's argument of it not being number one. If you are a purist of a college football fan, come to the Ole Miss game this year. Come to the Alabama game this year. That place is going to shake. I promise you it will. I know I went on a long tangent about it, but, buddy, that place to me, there's no other place greater in the world than Death Valley Tiger Stadium.
Just to throw mine up here, yes. I have Tiger Stadium at number one as well. We'll end up reading these out in a second. But, look, the hat, again, to reiterate for the 500th time for new viewers, I'm not an LSU fan. The furthest thing from it, I lost a bet. I'm wearing the damn hat for the whole offseason, blah, blah, blah. I've never been to Tiger Stadium. So, like, we're going to get ahead of that. But I was deliberate in trying to find information that was going to help me build a case for each of the stadiums that I have so that I'm not just going off of, like, what looks cool on TV? I'd sound like a goddamn dumbass if I did that. I tried to find how certain teams did and performed since a certain time frame against the spread at home. And I was able to find since 2013 a number of top stadiums that were in this upper echelon, and then I ranked them just based on some other things on what you hear people say. Tiger Stadium was one of the highest. They were tied with a couple others, but they were 56% of the time against the spread. So they were performing better than what Vegas thought that they were going to do, whether they were favored, not favored, which I'm sure doesn't happen often. They are impossible to beat at home. They are one of the few teams that has not only lived up to the difficulty of their environment that they create, but also the performance on their field. That is what I think was missed with what was created by this list by EA, is that they're basing it off of the vibe. They're basing it off of the loudness, the noise, all of these things, without truly calculating who actually backs it up with their performance. And you listen to anybody. Not even you. I ignored you on this. I made sure to ignore you on this. Anybody that I listened to yesterday.
What an asshole.
Everybody. Well, I can't listen to you because you're biased. Anybody that I heard share a take on this, like 90% of them said, why wasn't Tiger Stadium number one? It was very, very consistent that Tiger Stadium was considered to be at least one or two by anybody that shared takes on this. So they are, deservedly, should have been the number one. Not Kyle Field. And anyone you ask that's been to that stadium or watched a game in there will tell you it's loud as shit and it's tough as hell to play there.
And look, I know that you went viral because you were defending the team that you root for, okay?
In jest,
correct. Kyle Field is a very tough place to play in. I don't give two shits. You know, like I saw, what was it, Bud Elliott or somebody, I don't know who it was. They're 24-20, and I even make poke fun of them about it too. It don't matter. Joe, there's no reason that those Jimbo teams should have played teams as close as they did. Joe, there's no reason that Alabama a year ago has any business being a field goal by Jimbo call away from literally losing to A&M, which, by the way, might have kept Jimbo's job, okay? Yeah. That place is electric. We make fun of them all the time. And speaking about Kyle Field, I know they got some cult-like things that happened to him. I just got a 15 minutes worth of us discussing of why I was sticking up for him. It has no business in the top five. And that is, if you would have said Ben Hill Griffin Stadium number one, as a Tiger fan, you know what the truth is? I'd have been like, you know what? I'm going to defend Tiger Stadium here. They ain't lying. Because I've been to both, and I've been to electric games in both. They're not lying. And so Kyle Field just has no business being in the top five. Now, I'll go down the rest of our list here, but I didn't read mine off. But Ben Hill Griffin Stadium, number two. Neyland Stadium, Tennessee, number three. Beaver Stadium, Penn State, number four. Jordan Hare, Joe, I think is being vastly missed by people here.
Yeah, let me quickly read mine, and I want to talk about that because that's one that stands out to me. So I have Tiger Stadium 1, the Big House 2 of Michigan, number 3, Ohio Stadium for Ohio State, number 4, Jordan-Hare Stadium for Auburn, and the number 5, Ben Hill Griffin for Florida. So you brought up Jordan-Hare there. they're a very difficult place to play, but has not had consistently ranked teams over the past decade. They haven't consistently had top 10 teams. Now, they've obviously had some national championship competing programs in this time span that we've seen. But despite this, despite with Brian Harsin, despite with last year with Hugh Freeze, with a pretty barren roster that he was left with, they're 53% against the spread, and they're very successful in that top upper echelon of teams. I think that what really truly epitomizes how difficult it is to play at Jordan-Hare is the fact that last season against Alabama, what they did to keep that game close and to be up and leading when everybody and their mother knew that there was a talent gap between those two teams, despite the fact that Peyton Thorne could barely throw the damn football, they were able to almost accomplish what would have been one of the greatest upsets in that rivalry if it had happened. So, yeah, that is enough proof for me that they should have been in the top five.
Didn't even get, I mean, I guess the game was more night-ish at the end of it.
Yeah.
But that game wasn't even at night. But you know what, Joe, that is so interesting in all this, they also almost beat Georgia.
Right, and that gets forgotten.
And it gets
a banged up Georgia team, but yes, it does get forgotten.
Joe.
They also lost to New Mexico State, so we gotta remember that.
Okay. Saban also joked this past week about losing a ULM, okay, and saying that the guy at the gas station said that Nick Saban ain't gonna pan out. And that Saban's checking out. He goes, yeah. I don't think he is. I find it abysmal. I find it abysmal that you put like Outson Stadium ahead of Jordan-Hare. Like,
I don't mind Outson. You know what? The one that actually should have absolutely been higher that I didn't make my top five was Utah Stadium. That one is for like a lot of categories consistently tough to play at. But one thing that doesn't get talked about is how tough it is to get there, the altitude. A lot of people go there to die is the easiest way to put it. That one didn't make either of our top fives. I kind of deliberated on it, but that's a really, really unique one. Probably the toughest one out west for anybody to play at.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's Utah.
Ready to pop the question and take advantage of 30% off? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com to get 30% off select lab-grown diamonds. That's BlueNile.com for 30% off lab-grown diamonds. BlueNile.com.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So, man, I think you're discounting how crazy that environment can get, dude. Think about how many times you and I are doing a preview.
It can get very loud. I get it. It's tough to play there. It's really tough.
How many times we do a preview and we go, oh, they got BYU, they're go to BYU. BYU is not going to be very good this upcoming year, but think of how many times we just bring up having to play in that environment. I think it's worth discussing. Wait, I want to see if can I just bring up here. I didn't want to put Beaver Stadium on here. I don't think Beaver Stadium is top five worthy. I think that they're certainly top 10 worthy because of how crazy
meanwhile,
loud
you got
that
the big
gets.
House on yours at number two.
Wait, okay, the big house was tied with Tiger Stadium with performance against the spread. And also, over the last like 4 years, they've been a ridiculously hard place to win away games. They've been unbelievably tough to win.
Okay, yes, it's difficult to win there. You also
the biggest stadium in college football. Like what?
You also could hit two seat cushions together, and you could hear it all the way across the other stadium. And that place ain't rocking like that.
I know it's considered to not be as loud as Beaver, but on-field success again matters. I think that shit matters.
Oh my God!
Think of the amount of times that Michigan and Ohio State in the past 5 years that have traveled to go to Penn State and that they've won. It's happened too many times. For them to be top five, it's supposed to help you when you're close match. Like last year's a good example.
Meanwhile, you say that. Meanwhile, we have Florida and Auburn on our lists.
I think that, well, I found a statistic that supported Auburn, okay? But it also, the other part of this, is because at least they're covering. That's the whole point here. It's not always win-loss. It's covering, I think, is the important thing because there could be years where your team stinks, but you still find a way to play a team close. Ben Hill Griffin was the only one that I put on there that I didn't have a great like number argument to bring up. But I think you and I could both agree that place shit weird things happens. And we just haven't been given the opportunity to see a good coach in there. Once they get a good coach back there, that is going to be a tough,
well,
tough
the
place
thing is that they haven't had good coaching and they still have been absolutely yep. packing that place. Jorts are everywhere. Overalls are everywhere. Men that wear jean shorts. It might be the stupidest thing alive, but they are going to be there. Joe, you have lived in the northern part of this state. I have lived in the southern part of the state. There is no place more difficult to play than Ben Hill Griffin Stadium.
Yeah, I know.
It's not their fault that Napier sucks. It legitimately is not their fault. Joe, I remember during COVID, and then I think the year after COVID, Nick went in there twice and barely scathed out alive. By the way, he was almost losing to a 6-6 Florida team, right? Like we're talking about a place when it is right, which it hadn't been right in like 10 years. Not really. 1 year under Dan, McElwain a little bit, whatever. Napier it has not been. When that place is rolling, it's rolling. And again, I think it's the second toughest place to play in the country. Forget Napier. Forget what's going on there. It's not their fault that he's buffoons. But, Joe, I got to admit, you know, they were a score away from most of the game from beating the SEC champion, not just in 2022. So I look at them and say, look, you go in there, shit gets nuts, man. They play Richard Petty coming into the fourth quarter. Hey, baby! The most Florida shit that you could do. It's literally the most Florida shit you can do. There's just no place like it, man. Because of the high walls and everything, this gets condensed right there. Dude, it feels like people are on top of you. They're so close.
I think that's the really good way of putting it, is that they have been really in a hole the last three coaches that they've had. Because Muschamp,
no,
Mullen,
and McElwain.
Oh, and McElwain. So it's four coaches. It's been a streak of
four
coaches.
Well, who would be the other one? It was McElwain, Dan, and then Napier.
Muschamp.
Oh, fuck. I forgot about Muschamp.
Yeah, I mean, it's been that long since Urban Meyer. God! Had dog! A consistently
oh, my
good
God.
Coach. But But I almost wonder, if Ben Hill Griffin Stadium's not as big as it is for them, how much worse their record could have been during this time span? Because it certainly has helped them steal games that they probably had no business keeping close at the very least. So, man, I fear for the day that they hire, maybe it's Lane Kiffin, as you keep trying to joke about, that they hire somebody. We have a couple contributions.
Yeah, I see him.
If you want to bring
Elk says, come on, Joe, big house. is known for being quiet, shaking my head. He also says, easy for on-field success when you cheat, Joe.
I knew Elks was going to come in firing with this. Okay, look, at this, I get that, but you guys also let Michigan beat you at home in the past couple of years, so they deserve to be ranked ahead of you. I understand, and I know this. I'm not like this isn't something I ignored. I understand it's something that is very commonly discussed, that the Big House is not as loud as it could be despite its size because it's so open. The bowl is so open. There's not a lot of trap noise.
All of that's what she said.
But at the same time,
you can use the hand motions and talk about it being that big and the hole gashing wide open. You can't do that, okay? I can't help myself.
At the same time, they have had a tremendous success rate over the past 10 years and in the history of the sport. By the way, I will say, side note, I was doing a little bit of
Oregon fans think I hate on them. I was their biggest defender all year last year.
You were. It's just because you speak negatively on them on random things, so you sound like an... sound like an a-hole sometimes.
You got a whole bunch of old fuckers in that stadium that don't scream worth a damn.
It's also, I think the downside with Autzen is just it's not as big as some of these other stadiums. But I've heard it's incredibly loud. I mean, it's a very tough place to play.
Cody McGee says, I think Sanford Stadium at Georgia beats out Ben Hill Griffin, Florida. No way.
Yeah, I've heard, I mean, it's a tough place to play, but I've heard that place is kind of on the lower side of just,
well,
noise.
They, in their defense, and what they will tell you, which is true, they have not had premier night games at home.
Right. They rarely do it.
It rarely happens to them. And I think that they need it more because shit will get so weird and does in the South at night.
Well, it's just like how Bryant Denny didn't make our list. And a lot of people that chimed in on this yesterday, the real ball knowers, they said that, of course,
it is
if we just Saban's pull up.
There.
If we just pull a performance over the last 20 years, yes, obviously Georgia and obviously Alabama perform the best on those fields, but you got to take into account who's on those fields. It's two of the best dynasties that have appeared in college football in the history of the sport. Like, of course they're going to win most of their games under Kirby Smart and under Nick Saban.
But how does DeBoer do? And that is the ultimate question. Speaking of Kalen DeBoer, very quickly as we transition here, Joe, for whatever reason, I guess maybe just stupidity, but there have been some actual people coming out here making fun of Alabama recruiting. And, Joe, the biggest question that we had about Kalen DeBoer when he took the job as the next head coach in Alabama was, could he recruit and could he recruit in the South?
You're the one who said this. Don't let me in on this.
No, I will admit you agreed. Don't act like you didn't.
I agreed, but I was far more supportive of DeBoer than you were. Okay.
Well, more on the field. He has, though, been doing very well in recruiting.
He has, so far in the 2025 class, 12 four-star commitments per 247 Sports. Some of the top guys, the number 4 linebacker, Daryl Johnson, number 6 linebacker, Dawson Merritt, number 2 safety, Derek Smith, number 14 defensive lineman, Antonio Coleman. I think what really stands out to me, Blake, is the fact that Kalen DeBoer understands where his criticism lies, where a lot of the doubt could have set in early, is if he could recruit the defensive side of the football. And you know what he did? He found 2 tough-ass linebackers, a defensive lineman, a really good safety, some good corners, some big offensive tackles that he's bringing in. I think that, to me, is already starting to quiet some of the doubters. They need to keep him in the boat. They need to keep him, you know, on the ship of this team moving forward that want to be a part of the future of this program. It's tough to keep these kids committed all the time. You know, we have to say that because it just happened with USC. But right now, they're building a really good foundation. I think the biggest part, though, that I'm very bullish on them is the commitment of Keelan Russell, who won the Elite 11 and who has been, if you pay attention in recruiting circles, one of the biggest risers throughout this process. Big, strong,
having
athletic,
a very Tua Tagovailoa type of rise to him. and reference and it being the same school in Alabama for this New York rise.
And more importantly, he's a bigger, stronger, much bigger, stronger athlete than Tua was coming out of high school. So I think that they're able to easily attract whatever offensive weapons and also playmakers like a Keelan Russell is proof that they're going to get those playmakers. But it all does just come down to the one caveat, and I think they'll be fine, but the caveat is, do they keep everybody committed? Because we've seen things turn last second in the past.
So I'm going to talk about the positives first. Look, there, myself included, and I will admit where I am wrong here. I did not honestly think that he was going to come in the South and have as much success as he has had early in recruiting. What I did and what me and you talked about, I'm sure that you'll remember this, is I have been very adamant that, listen, just because Alabama boosters has not had to do what everybody else had to do in recruiting in NIL does not mean that that booster base won't go absolutely nuclear for to be and stay relevant. Joe, they have. And that's just the bottom line that's been helping DeBoer too. I am shocked that he has done as good as he has. I will admit my faults and my wrongs. I think you bring up the biggest key, though, here. Joe, what's going to start happening when they don't have the success that they normally have been having under Nick? So I could see, hypothetically, Kirby Smart saying to any one of those people up top, hey, man, we're the new big dog. We are the team that runs the SEC now. And those are the things that I think that DeBoer is going to have to defend. Alabama fans, though, are going to step up to the plate when time is called to answer any NIL bells. And I think that what people have always forgotten about that place, they didn't understand it and they let it, you know, Joe, it's like the old wives' tale, like your father tells you these stories and they get passed down generation to generation and people forget. Alabama is a place that will spend money to be great, to have excellence.
Yeah.
Don't let anybody doubt you other than that. I just want to emphasize that when teams start coming in and trying to purge you when you lose a game or two, that's when real SEC recruiting happens. Joe, I fully believe that SEC recruiting is different than any other conference, and I don't even think it's remotely close. The war that has happened in the South for both position groups, offense and defensive line, is a war day in and day out. Can Kalen DeBoer sustain that will be my ultimate question.
And I think you bring up a really good point there where and why I brought up let's see what happens, because it is a perfect example of what happened to Billy Napier, and I don't think that DeBoer will have
– literally happened to Billy Napier.
He will not have as much of a fall off as Billy Napier, because Billy Napier wasn't proven at the Power 5 level like Kalen DeBoer was in terms of production. At the very least, if anything falls off, it's going to be defensive recruiting, because we know that they're going to look really good on offense and they're going to be able to keep most of these kids on board offensively. But as soon as things do go awry, if they do lose a game that they're not supposed to, there will be negative recruiting that will happen. But I'm going to keep saying it. I'm very optimistic, and I think that this is outperforming the expectations that I had certainly this offseason when he took over.
Even you're a little bit surprised.
No, I'm not surprised, because when this transition happened, you were very adamant about, oh, I don't think he's going to succeed recruiting defensively. And
well,
I pushed back and said,
he's not done yet.
I know he's not done yet, but I pushed back and said that I think we haven't seen him with the resources available to him yet, which is why I am optimistic he will figure it out. But I am surprised that he has figured it out this early, and it makes me feel more optimistic that he's going to get it done, because he's doing it so quickly and he's put together such a good foundation. A lot of early coaches can't do this.
Joe, I look at the Alabama fan base. A lot of them follow me on Twitter. I follow a lot of them on Twitter because of the hatred that's been had with the school that I cover and them. Joe, I have tweets bookmarked here just for the show, not to like quote tweet them. Joe, I'll just pull a couple. Here's one from Ricky S. on Twitter, saying, I got to be honest, I'm a little shocked of what DeBoer is doing. And he spells DeBoer wrong, so they don't even know how to fully spell their coach's last name yet. But I do think that there is legitimately people in that own fan base that is a little bit shocked. Joe, they're a top three class at the current moment. And I do think that that has something to say. But we could also be here in December on signing day and the both of us look at each other and say, hey, man, DeBoer lost a lot of shit because he didn't have the season that I think a lot of people thought that they would have. We'll see. Long 6 months is a long time, brother.
Yep.
It's literally half the year that you have to wait. All right. You want to get to this Oklahoma State deep dive?
Yep, let's do it.
All right. So, Joe, we continue on our path down the very windy road. You know, like we were in the ACC the last couple of days, or two times we did this. We hop back to the Big 12. We go to Oklahoma State, which I'm going to ask you if this is true. I have a feeling about something. I think that you like Oklahoma State.
It's probably one of the least excited segments I'm going to have.
Oh, I completely misread
that. I love Ollie Gordon. I love Ollie Gordon. I'm about to have a take that is going to piss you off and piss Oklahoma State fans off.
If you say that he's going to win the Heisman, I am leaving the show.
No, that's not it. Ode is the complete inverse of that.
Okay.
What?
You think he's going to suck?
No. Ollie Gordon's my number one running back for the 2025.
Well, what's the inverse of winning the Heisman? Sucking.
No. I'm saying the inverse. It's not good outlook for Oklahoma State. Look, they are bringing back a lot of key starters. They bring back all five starting offensive linemen, 214 career starts amongst the group that is coming back. Ollie Gordon, to me, I think is the most unique running backs in the country. Alan Bowman's a wild card, but I also like Brennan Presley for the plays that he made down the stretch once they got into a rhythm. Here's the take that I think is going to piss everybody off. They don't have a very easy schedule, and they play some difficult opponents in the Big 12. I think it was one of the stupidest goddamn things whoever scheduled South Dakota State as their FCS opponent. And for anybody who wants to come in here and bang on the door and say, what are you talking about, Joe? Are you seriously going to say an FCS team's going to upset Oklahoma State? I don't think that the upset happens, but this was easily one of the worst matchups that you could have picked.
Why?
South Dakota State is a team that is 29-1 and on a ridiculous streak. They are the version of North Dakota State that had multiple massive upsets not that long ago. And some might argue that they're better than that North Dakota State team that we saw 5 or so years ago that had this ridiculous run of national championships. South Dakota State is a maul you, punch you in the mouth type of a team with some really mean offensive linemen and defensive linemen. They are built way better than people think. I'm not trying to pull a card here, Oklahoma State fans. I'm not trying to come up here and say you guys are going to get your asses kicked by South Dakota State, but I know enough about this South Dakota State program to say you can't overlook them. All I'm trying to paint here is that you got to be ready. And if you get past them and you beat them cleanly, I think that that's a really good barometer for success. And you beat them, you cover whatever the point spread is, totally a great barometer for success. But if you struggle in this game and it's close, I think that's going to be very telling of what is going to happen for you in 2024.
So what do you hate about them?
What do I hate about Oklahoma State?
Yeah, because everything that you were saying,
Bowman,
to me,
I don't like Alan Bowman and I don't like their secondary.
Okay, so let's just attack the offensive side of the football very quickly. Mm-hmm. Ollie Gordon returns. They have five offensive linemen return. Their quarterback returns. Oh, by the way, two of the top three tacklers return for the team. My question becomes, Joe, they were in a tougher Big 12 last year and got to the Big 12 title game. I mean, they're bringing a lot back. What makes me believe that that same team facing not Texas – and not Oklahoma again. Well, which maybe they do face. They're not playing Oklahoma next year. Those two teams, like not playing those two teams, Joe, they were a 10-4 team a year ago. I mean, like, how are they winning? Now, I know that they had a very bad loss early in the season last year with a young team. Well, that team's back. And I got to be real with you. I got to disagree with you on you're going to have to – now, I can be swayed. Let me say it like this. You could sway me to changing my mind on them. But the way that I see it is you have the same goddamn team returning, and then all of a sudden you have a lesser conference that you have to win. Joe, I'm not 1,000% sold at the current moment that they can't win it.
But I see, this is where I disagree. I really just don't think that, for Oklahoma State's sake, I don't think the conference necessarily got easier, especially when we look at the schedule that
they're handed. Texas and Oklahoma are out.
Obviously that it's easier that they're gone, but at the same time, they now have to face Utah. In their non-con, they have to play Arkansas.
Would you rather face Utah or Texas?
I'd obviously rather face Utah, but Utah is still a damn tough game. I don't think it's an easy game for them. It's a game that they don't match up well with. I don't think it's a team that they don't match up well with at all.
It's still not Texas.
Okay, just because they're not a top three team in the country doesn't mean it's not going to be a really hard game. They got their asses whooped by Texas in the Big 12 championship game. They're going to lose to Utah. Look, I'm not saying that Oklahoma State's going to shit the bed and they're going to go below 500. That's not what I'm trying to say. I just don't see them being a championship contender, as some have discussed them as.
Well, what championship are you trying to talk about?
Big 12 championship. Big 12.
If that's what you're talking about, I fully disagree with you. Joe, I'm still unconvinced of what you, like, when you're basically telling me the entire damn team was returning, okay? And what is probably the biggest unit of return being the five offensive linemen that are returning. By the way, you have Ollie Gordon returning and somebody that we didn't even mention in our top wide receivers, the Presley kid who had 101 catches last season. Now, I understand where your concern is, and this is how you roll. I get it. And I don't actually disagree with you on this. Bowman's inaccuracy and ineptitude at times is going to lose them a game that they have no business losing. South Alabama says hello. But are we going to act like that literally at Oklahoma State of all places that we have not seen under Mike Gundy a first-year starting quarterback not get better in year two? Joe, it has been the epitome of Mike Gundy at any program taking a first-year starter, developing them better for a second year, and them improving.
Okay, but we need to be more specific in talking about Bowman, because it wasn't just inaccuracy. He was extremely erratic and all over the place. Like, even in the games that they won, like I look at the Oklahoma game, a lot of these times he made some dumb mistakes and he got bailed out by Ollie Gordon. We're assuming that Ollie Gordon goes unscathed throughout the entirety of the season without suffering any injuries. And we got to remember here, Ollie Gordon wasn't the lead back for the first couple of weeks. They were rotating for some weird reason. And we could call into question here some of the offensive decision-making last year by Oklahoma State, okay? But at the same time, all I'm just trying to say here is that, yes, there are some really important, nice players that are coming back. But I think, as we've talked about, with Utah, with Kansas State, with Arizona, with West Virginia, who we haven't gotten to yet, with a lot of these top Big 12 teams, they're bringing back a lot of similar strengths. A lot of similar strengths.
Yes.
And I feel better at quarterback of those teams than I do with Alan Bowman. It's not like Alan Bowman is a true junior that is, like you're talking about, in his second season as the starter is going to figure it out. He's on his, like, seventh year. There's nothing else for him to figure out.
I mean, Chris Winkie could have filed for an AARP card when he won a Heisman. Joe, I'm not asking him. Number one, I'm not saying that they're going to be undefeated. I don't disagree with you on Bowman completely. But I think if he limits turnovers and those turnovers do go down and he's less erratic, Joe, you have a team that's competing for a Big 12 title game last year, and they legitimately are bringing so many people back. They're in the top 10 of returning production. Joe, they have two 100 tacklers returning. Now, I will tell you there is an area that I'm very concerned with them on. You want to know what it is?
What?
They don't have enough pressure after the quarterback. This is the biggest issue that I have with them right now. They have a lot of dudes that are, I don't want to just say good, Joe, but almost elite tacklers. You can't have three guys that have 100 tackles plus and not be a very good tackling team. That is unreal that you do that. You bring two of them back, and Nick Martin and Rucker. But the bottom line for me is they are not generating enough pressure on the defensive line or just in general for them to have success long term. If there is something, that I worry about, like a team against Utah with Cam Rising. If you can't get to Cam Rising, if you can't get to the kid from Oklahoma or from Kansas State, buddy, you're in trouble. And I got a hot take for you. Joey, it bugged them all last year. They beat Oklahoma because of the pressure they put on Dylan Gabriel. That is the reason why they won that game. They do not have enough production there to be a team that I think shouldn't worry about it. If you label one thing that I'm worried about them the most, more than Bowman, and that's how that it's bad. Joe, they are one of the worst teams in the country last year getting after the quarterback.
And this was the second fold of my lack of confidence in the, again, eight or nine win team. I think that's a fine season if you're Oklahoma State, but you bring up second year in their new defensive coordinator who came from Division II Gannon. I think they're Division II or Division III, came from a lower level program in Gannon. If you look at their transfer portal movement, they didn't bring anybody big in to help supplement and boost their defense. Their best recruit on every single transfer portal site was an edge rusher from Gannon University or wherever it is. I agree with you, and that is where I'm a little concerned, because how many times last year did they give up ridiculous point totals to teams that they should not have? And I'm talking about games like where they gave up 45 to UCF. I'm talking about the later stretch where they were supposed to be really good. They gave up 30 points to Houston. They gave up 34 points to BYU, 49 to Texas. They gave up way too much to teams that they were supposed to, that they really should have blown out of the water. I don't know how much better this defense gets, and you've got a relatively unproven defensive coordinator that struggled last year that didn't bring in any premier talent that makes me feel like they're going to get a lot better. I love their linebacking core. Their D-line's a little bit shaky, and their secondary was really inconsistent last year. So,
and I feel like there's more balanced Big 12 teams. I can make the argument their secondary was so shaky because there was zero pass rush.
Yeah, that could go into the conversation.
Legitimately, Joe, they had two safeties over 100 tackles. I mean, you can say what you want, Joe, but look, there is one statistic that John Madden used to say about good defensive teams. You know what it was? Your pass rush is not good enough if your safeties are making triple-digit tackles. I'll never forget. You can talk about coverage all the live long day, but you have one of the better coaches. John Madden is a freaking legend, okay? The bottom line is, Joe, you want to know why those DBs look that bad? Joe, they're not going to cover for 5 seconds. I mean, 6 seconds. It is very difficult to do it. Joe, against Texas, what do? They knew that they had no shot whatsoever at getting to the quarterback. They bailed out. I mean, to some extent, we should say that they tried to play prevent after the first quarter was over with. And that's just how they got beat. Now, Duke got a lot of production returning there. It's going to be interesting to see what we see from Oklahoma State. Prediction on their season, I'm going to go 10-2.
Oh, 8-4. I don't know, man. 10-2 is – 10-2 is assuming that they beat a combination of Utah, Kansas State, West Virginia, and Arkansas. They beat
– Okay, can I give you my hot take?
Okay.
I don't know if Arkansas beats them. I think we have to come to a very strong conversation about Arky this year.
Well, that's my whole point. I don't think that game's a walkover.
I literally had them losing to Utah and Kansas State. I said,
so you're saying that Oklahoma State beats Arkansas?
Yeah. Brother, that offensive line is not good at all.
I think that game could end up being pretty close.
That's why I'm saying I think they can beat them. A first-time starter going against an experienced coach like Gundy, they're going to throw the kitchen sink at that kid. And I don't think Sam Pittman's ready, brother. I really don't.
They also have to play Colorado at the end of the season too, which is a wild card.
Hot take. If Ollie Gordon is healthy when they play Colorado, he's going to run for 250 plus. Clip it. Probably. Even though you hate me saying clip it. He's going to run for 250 plus. Bank on it. All right. We'll see y'all again on Sunday. Y'all have a going, man. Wait, 4th of July. No, we'll do shows before 4th of July, correct? Yeah.
Yeah, there's two shows that we'll do before
4th. Okay. We'll see Sunday, man.
Three shows.
Okay, peace.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.